It's time, that most wonderful time of the day slash week. Arthur Schwartz, the food mensch. Hello, Arthur Schwartz, food mensch. How are you?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, for whenever you're
good
listening.
night.
In the middle of the night, it could be. I have to say, I come across this a lot. I was at a dinner the other night at a club we belong to, and one of my neighbors and members of the club was sitting next to us. I know he's a bachelor because my kitchen windows look over his little terrace. I've never seen anybody but him on the terrace. Oh, yeah, I've seen a maid a few times. But anyway, so I said, we were talking about food at the club, and I said, well, do you ever cook? And he said, I don't cook, period. I don't cook. I said, well, then what do you eat? He said, well, I'll bake a potato, and he went on to things that you are cooking. So I had to say, you know, that's cooking. But I'll get to that later, because he said to me, what are you cooking? Which was a fair question, since he knows I cook all the time. And in fact, I have something to share about what I'm cooking. I mean, I'm happy to tell people what I'm cooking, because I'm never embarrassed by what I'm cooking, unless it was a complete failure, and I won't tell them that anyway. But no, I learned a new technique for cooking chicken, and which we eat a lot of, probably too much of. And I found the product to make it with just the other day. For the first time, I saw skin on, but boneless chicken thighs. My housekeeper just entered. Irene, good morning. I'm on the radio or podcast. What are we calling it these days?
It's the radio.
So, I think it's radio, but you know,
it is
people
the
say,
radio.
Oh, you do a podcast. So anyway, the point is, I found skin on but boneless chicken thighs, Bell & Evans branded chicken, in the supermarket the other day. I never saw that before. I have many, many times boned out chicken thighs because I want to cook them with the skin on, but no bone. But here it was, all done for me, which, and I don't like doing it so much. I mean, there's only one bone in a chicken thigh, but I always feel like I'm wasting something because I'm not really skilled at deboning chicken thighs, as many as I've done. In any case, what you do is you put, first of all, you season the chicken thighs well. Salt and pepper is my basic. Next time I do this, and I will be doing it again and again and again, I'm sure, I will do different seasonings, but just the basic, of course, would be a lot of salt on both sides of the chicken, a lot of pepper on both sides of the chicken. Put the chicken in a cold skillet. I use my black cast iron skillet. It's just large enough for four chicken thighs. Remember, these spread out because the skin on, and you want the skin to touch the pan, excess skin even. Leave it on. Don't trim these. You want every bit of skin you can get because it has fat on it. Put it skin side down in the cold skillet. Put the skillet over high heat. As soon as you see the chicken starting to sizzle a little bit, that means the pan's hot. Lower the heat. Now, I only lowered it to medium. I think this is going to be a skill I'll have to get, and I think other people will want to get it too. It's all going to depend on the heat source and your pan and blah, blah, how much you're going to reduce the heat after you got the pan started. You don't want the chicken to cook too fast. You want the chicken skin to get really brown and crisp. And the way you can tell that it is only by lifting it up a little bit with tongs, or you can see the excess skin that you let be on the thighs and was touching the pan. It'll start browning visibly, even from this side. And only at that point, when the skin is well browned, do you flip over the chicken to cook the other side. Now, it doesn't take very long. I would not overcook this chicken. I would say that it's no more than 8 minutes on the skin side. Maybe 10 at the most. And then after that, it's only going to, even though it looks sort of raw on the top, as soon as you flip it over, it's going to cook through, and it's not going to need more than like another 2, 3 minutes. It doesn't have to brown really, although it may well get brown. And that's it. Now, I mean, I'm going to season it next time with, because I've been doing this a lot lately with my other ways of cooking chicken thighs, with some ground fennel seed. I happen to have the world's largest stash of fennel seed because I used to grow the wild fennel that the seed comes from in the garden by my building. And you know what? I've discovered fennel seed lasts a very long time. So not only don't you use a lot each time you use it, but it seems to be still fragrant and flavorful after the several years that I've been storing it. So that's one thing that I'm cooking now. The other thing is, even though I've yet to see the spring vegetables that I want to cook right now, asparagus, artichokes. I mean, I could buy these big artichokes. Yeah, they're coming in from California. It's April. But, you know, they're really not only they expensive and too big for what I like to do with them, but it's a lot of work. So I'm looking for the smaller artichokes and the ones that don't have a lot of waste also. But meantime, I had to have vegetables. I mean, both Bob and I were craving more, we need more vegetables. So I made, even though it's slightly out of season, truly, a big pot of minestrone. Now, my minestrone is almost is really a vegetable stew. There's no, well, there is broth, and you can make it with more broth than I make it with by just adding more broth or more water. I had a box of a chicken broth I bought on serious sale a few weeks ago. It's one of the College Inn, which is a brand I buy, and they were only $2 for a 32-ounce box of broth. It's very cheap. In fact, that's probably what it cost me when I make it myself. And it's perfectly good for making soup like I was going to make with tons of vegetables. But you know what? It wasn't enough broth, really. So I used a lot of water. And I have made minestrone just with water, without any broth. I do save you know, the rinds of Parmigiano Reggiano, which always has a little bit of cheese stuck to it. And if you can peel them if you're fastidious, but I don't. You can stick those in your soup, and they add like a bone. It'll add flavor. And if you're making a vegetarian soup, that's what you do. You put in some cheese rinds. Or I'll give you a trick at the very end if you don't like the flavor of just the sweet vegetables. But I always think of minestrone as a process, and I enjoy the process. There's a lot of cutting and dicing to do to make a nice big. By the way, the word minestrone, I was going to say big, the word minestrone means big minestra, and a minestra is that cross between, well, it's a first course in Italian. Eating. You can have pasta, you can have riso, rice, but if you have like pasta and beans, that's minestra. And there are other many, 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 many minestra. So, but a minestrone is a big one. So my big one starts out with the usual, you know, carrot, onion, celery. My big pot, I use 2 cups of each. And I don't cut either the celery or the carrot or the onion, for that matter, in a fine dice. I would go mince. No, I wouldn't say mince. It's more diced, more 1/4 inch to 1/2 inch diced, because I want a chunky soup in the end. This is not a base like, you know, you usually do for gravy or whatever, or something that cooks a long time. This is cooked a long time, but I want, you know, I want substance here. So cut into nice sized dice. 2 cups each of carrot, onion, celery. And I say a process because I put the oil in the bottom of the big pot, and I first usually put in the onion. And while that's cooking a little bit, I cut up the celery and put that in the pot, and cut up the carrot and put that in the pot. I don't have to have them all prepped ahead of time. And then as those three things are cooking together, the next thing, vegetable I put in is string beans. Now, this brings me to the string bean conundrum. I go to the market lately, and string beans are crazy expensive. And just the day that I wanted them, really, because I wanted them for the soup, they were super crazy expensive. I paid $5.99 a pound, and I bought them against my instinct, not instinct, my knowledge, in one of those bags. Mostly I see string beans. I call them string beans. If you're young, you call them green beans. So green beans in a bag. Be careful. A lot of these packages have very, very fine green stripes on them that make the contents inside look greener than they really are. And I have gotten stuck more than once, and I swore I wouldn't buy them again. And by the way, they're snipped already. They call them snipped. Well, they're not snipped all that well, but it's well enough. But who wants that dry end? You know what I mean? I want that snipped to the last minute. In any case, I bought them. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to buy them. They probably have loose ones that are going to be cheaper than these, gourmet beans. You know what? The loose ones, which were invisibly bad condition, were $7.99 a pound. So I went online to see what's going on with string beans, and I could find nothing except that string beans in my neighborhood seem to be a lot more expensive than every other place. I don't know why. But anyway, the next ingredient I put in is string beans or green beans, and I cut them into 1-inch lengths before I throw them in the pot with the other vegetables. Keep swishing around. Oh, but at this point, I'm adding salt. The next vegetable is usually zucchini. Now, at this time of the year, I've got gorgeous zucchini, but they're a little larger than I usually like. I would call them medium-large zucchini, and I use two. Cut into long ways into quarters, and then crosswise into, I would say, 3/4-inch pieces, inch pieces, big pieces. The soup's going to cook a long time, and the zucchini breaks down. I like the zucchini in the soup when it breaks down because it adds some substance to the whole deal. After adding the zucchini and tossing that around, there's still no liquid, by the way. I do cabbage. Now, they had in my market small heads of Savoy cabbage, so I bought one and I used the whole small head. I cut out the core, I shred the cabbage, rinse it under the faucet, throw it in the pot wet. That's my first moist ingredient, really. Toss that around, cover the pot, let the cabbage steam for 10 minutes, uncover the pot, stir it around again, and at this point, you can add your liquid, water to just cover, some chicken broth and water, part, and also 128-ounce can of plum tomatoes. Now I cut up the tomato. I do crush them sometimes. Just crush them right into the pot, and you can have big lumps of it of tomato if you like. Sometimes I take a knife and actually cut them up in the can, using the can itself I don't know what you call it, but anyway, you can do that. Anyway, throw the tomatoes in as well, and that's it. You're gonna at some point soon, you're gonna want to put in salt and pepper, and I let this simmer, plop, really. Not boil, but simmer away for about an hour and a half, even 2 hours. If you want to add another starch, now I have to decide every time I make minestrone, what am I going to do here? I, the other day, put in some potato. Not much. Maybe for this enormous pot of soup, maybe it was 12 ounces of white potato. I buy these thin skin white potatoes. I don't bother peeling them. I just scrub them. And I cut it into relatively big pieces because I wanted the sense of the potato. Sometimes I don't do potato, or I'll do a little bit of potato cut into smaller cubes and add beans. If you like beans in your soup, this is a good time to throw in a can of white cannellini. I don't usually like cannellini for them in the can for their own sake, but in a pot of soup, I'm fine with it. And You know, you put them in after the soup is cooked for a good hour or so, because you don't want them to disappear in the soup. This is also a soup that can accommodate rice or pasta. So you could cook rice right in the soup, adding some more water, or you could cook the pasta separately or in the soup, depending on the pasta. At the very end, I like to put in a lot of torn fresh basil. And by the way, if you're making this, makes a lot of soup. This is at least 8 servings of soup, maybe more. And it freezes well or well enough. Nothing really, except maybe ice cream, improves in the freezer, even ice cream. Anyway, point is, you can make it ahead. It'll actually last several days in the refrigerator, and the second time you make it, you can have the base soup and make a variation on it somehow or other. So a lot of fresh basil is nice at the end. And we're going to eat it for the second day today. And I think we're just going to eat it the way it is. I'm not adding any extra stuff. Although I do have some. In cleaning out the shelf the other day, I found a small jar of mezze rigatoni. And maybe I'll boil them up and get rid of them. So we're well set with vegetables. I'm going to go to the same market I bought the chicken thighs in and buy some more and improve my technique on that. And this is a bad thing. I have a craving for brownies. I can eat brownies, but in moderation, everything. So, but I have to bake the brownies to be able to eat the brownies.
True.
I haven't really found a store-bought brownie that I have to have. Whereas I have a recipe that is so easy, it's tempting to make it all the time, and I love it. And it's from a website called Smitten Kitchen. We've talked about this before. I think we've even talked about this very recipe before. It's the woman who writes this blog, website, whatever you call it. This is her favorite. So if you go to the Smitten Kitchen website, you will find her favorite brownies. It's called My Favorite Brownies. And they, as I said, they're super easy. I buy the chocolate as, because this is an emergency sweet dish by me, meaning if we have to have something, I can whip this up in no time. You just in a mixing bowl, melt together 3 ounces of unsweetened chocolate, broken up into pieces or whatever. She says roughly chopped, but my chocolate can be broken up into small pieces easily with my hand. And a half a cup, meaning a stick, a whole stick of butter. Melt those together in a metal, well, it could be ceramic, a mixing bowl over some hot or simmering water. And when the two are melted and smooth together, stir in 1 1/3 cups of regular ordinary granulated sugar. I've reduced that to 1 1/4 lately. I'm just giving you her formula, which is mine, except for that. And then beat in 2 large eggs. A good teaspoon of vanilla extract, and because salt improves almost everything, a half a teaspoon of, I use sea salt. She could call them the flaky sea salt. I have ordinary sea salt, and yes, they are a tiny bit salty in the end. So you stir all of that together, and then you add in 2/3 cup of flour. And stir that in until it's just well mixed in. It's going to be a lovely batter. You're going to be tempted to lick your fingers of it. And it gets baked. Now, this is a technique that I've done for years now, and I'm surprised it's not done more often. You line your, in this case, 8-inch square pan with parchment paper, so that the it's not going to go up. Well, first of all, lightly butter the pan, put down the parchment paper so that the ends come up on both on two sides, and this is going to help you lift the brownies out without breaking them when they're done. You don't have to have four sides up. Two sides is enough. Goes in a 350-degree oven for, I don't know, depends on your oven. I would say 30, 35 minutes. And when you take them out, your toothpick should, you know how that, the cake tester thing, a toothpick yep. inserted in the center, it should come out batter-free. So I in my oven, it takes a good 30 minutes. And that's it. Let it cool. And then once it's, you know, almost all together cool, you can take it out of the pan. You know, they go in the refrigerator, and they're sort of really nice out of the refrigerator, but I usually don't have enough left over to store them for very long. But I do share. I first discovered this recipe because a neighbor of mine made them and brought me some. And she said, "Oh, it's a, you know, it's online, this recipe." So I've been doing it ever since. So I give her some when I make them, and I give my other next door neighbor some. When I make. We got to get them out of the house quickly. You know what I mean?
I see. Will you be making them later?
Well, I took the chocolate out of the closet here to remind me that I could.
By the way, have you, my easy, this is decades ago, James Beard recipe, brownies recipe was, I think, the James Beard brownies recipe, which is seems pretty similar, but I can't remember. Did you ever try that one?
I don't remember. I have, you know, I've tried and eaten and even published so many brownie recipes
I'm
over
sure.
the years. This definitely is my favorite because I don't like cakey brownies. I like...
Right.
More on the
brownie
fudgy side, but these are not fudgy. They're just really rich and delicious. So they're in between, and that and also an 8-inch square pan. If you cut these into little squares, you really get a lot. I mean, you don't need more than you know two little squares of this to be satisfied. I think. I know.
And you have to get them out of the house.
And well, I do, yeah, because you know what? We're not. We can't be. We cannot be trusted with cookies and brownies or ice cream, for that matter. I can't be. And I don't know if anybody else has noticed, but Haagen-Dazs has been on serious sale almost everywhere lately. I think they're feeling competition from what other fancy ice creams. But in my neighborhood, you can't buy string beans, but you can get Haagen-Dazs, three containers for $10.
But people have found out about the gum in Haagen-Dazs, and they're going, uh-oh.
I don't know. What's wrong with gum?
That was a rhetorical question, I take it.
You know. You had a question, my dear.
I did. And this goes way back to the beginning, and you mentioned it, but I
Oh, baked potato?
No, got the baked potato. And right after I asked this question, you can use your Easy Baked Potato because it's very similar to... the chicken, but chicken goes skin side up.
No, down. The whole point
down.
Is crispy
okay, perfect.
Skin.
Okay.
No.
Good.
You put the chicken in a cold pan, skin side down. Start it on high heat. As soon as it starts sizzling, turn down the heat. I've yet to master the temperature it should be fully cooked at, but I had it more or less at medium over my strong burner, and I think that was a little too strong. Because it was a little too strong. You want the skin to render out its fat and get really crisp, and then you can turn it over and cook the underside.
At the very end.
Which you,
okay,
by
perfect.
The way, which soaks up seasoning. So when you're seasoning your chicken, remember it's the underside, the not skin side, that's going to get most of the seasoning.
Perfect.
Which is okay.
And now do you want to do baked potatoes since you've got another 30
Oh,
seconds?
Yeah. So this is very quick because I learned this from James Beard, who thought a baked potato was worthy of a gourmet, as he would say, because he thought a gourmet was a person. I scrub the potatoes. I poke a few holes in them, put them on directly on the rack in a 400-degree oven, and they usually take, the big potatoes usually take a good hour. And when you can poke your knife all the way through easily, you know they're done. And then while they're still hot, I hold them in a pot holder, not to burn my hand, and to open up the potato, I put a fork in long ways, make a cross in on the potato with a fork, and then if you squeeze the potato up, you're going to get a nice fluffy baked potato, and into which you can dump as much butter as you want and salt. And I don't need much else, although, you know,
you
certainly
put
you can put
pepper
sour
or
cream and chives on it or anything. My neighbor, John, the bachelor, who says he doesn't cook, does bake. He bakes both sweet potatoes. I asked him this. He bakes both sweet potatoes and regular potatoes, and then he puts stuff on it, even if it's just like cheese. So, and you know what? That's cooking.
Absolutely. My dad's cooking was baked potato and steak, and we were all fine.
Yeah, exactly. Well, my father only cooked two things: out of a can, corned beef hash. The Broadcast was the brand. Broadcast corned beef hash, and he also, but he did make lox, eggs, and onions,
Good.
which you
All
have to
good.
soak. You know, that was actually a real cooking deal there. But I must say, he made corned beef hash really crispy on the outside, and delicious. Okay.
Okay, I'm hungry. Thanks.
I look forward to my brownies. And also, we have enough minestrone to last another couple days. Okay, folks, have a great week. Enjoy the spring, because it is here.
Thank you very much. This has been Arthur Schwartz, The Food Match on Robin Hood Radio.